Very candid and open conversation with Sophia Armen. Connecting dots between all kinds of things. What kind of fits into the next step? Because this is Father Voskin, and I'm a priest of the Armenian Church. Connecting dots between the spiritual, emotional, physical, and everything in between. Looking at life through the most ancient of all Christian fabrics, Armenian Orthodoxy. This is episode number 602 of The Next Step, and I'm inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries welcoming you to our 12th year of broadcasting The Next Step with Father Voskin. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of their faith and spirituality in their lives today. Blending the most ancient traditions of Armenian Orthodoxy with the challenges of the 21st century, Father Voskin brings a distinctive and unique voice to the Christian conversation of peace, harmony, and love. Armadoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
I think you have to definitely have a faster rate. It has to be noticeably faster, a rate at which things move forward as opposed to the rate at which things pile up. And when things pile up at a faster rate, you are in trouble. I feel that's what's happening right now. Things are just like really piling up, but we are moving forward too, okay? So I have so much to share with you. I know we are in the Christmas season, in the Advent season. Hey, did you see that new video? Yeah. Thank you for making it go viral already. It's been what, like less than 24 hours that it's out? And we're getting response from throughout the world. We'll have a link on today's show notes. Do check it out. It's the new one. It was supposed to come out a few weeks ago when Advent just hit. But anyway, it's the new one, and I'm really, really proud of it. Very happy with the results, too. Listen, today we do have that interview that I promised you last week. And I've got a lot to talk about. I want to share with you what happened last week when we had the fundraiser for FLY, for the Freedom Loving Youth, for the work that they're doing in the earthquake zone in Gyumri, and of course in Syria, with war-torn Syria. I mean, we were moved to tears. We were really, literally moved to tears. I'm just really glad that In His Shoes had targeted this group, and we had a really good turnout that night as well. So I do have a lot to share with you, and really, it's not something that it's going to be going away today, okay? We're going to be talking about it in the next few weeks, next few months, because I think that there's some opportunities for us to really walk in the shoes of others where it really counts and where it really matters. So stay tuned for that. We'll talk a little bit more about it later on in the show. I did promise you last week, Sophia Armen, and I am here to deliver. I had a chance to sit with her yesterday. She came by. We set up a little mobile studio, and we had a great interview that moved us from the genocide resolution over to some essential existential issues. Things like selfhood, purpose, meaning, why we do these kind of things. What's the purpose of it all? Anyway, let me let her talk, because what you're going to find in this interview, here is an organizer, here is an activist, here is definitely a scholar who has earned the right to speak about this, who has truly, truly, she knows the material, but even more important, she's able to articulate and pass along that information. I was very impressed. I think you're going to agree as well. Here is the first part of the interview with Sophia Armen. I am so excited this morning because we have with us Sophia Armen. And we're taking a break from everything else. I know it's the winter solstice coming up. We've got Christmas next week. But here's a pre-Christmas treat for you. Sophia Armen in the studio. And the big excitement news throughout all Armenian communities is that the United States Senate approved the Armenian Genocide resolution unanimously. Now, I know you're going to say, hey, Father Voskin, you weren't a big fan of this. Well, maybe I need to bounce off some ideas with our guest today. Our guest, Sophia Armin, she's an activist, community organizer, a scholar in her own rights. She's here with us to share some of her ideas. She made headlines in the Los Angeles Times last week. And first of all, welcome, Sophia.
Thank you, Devoskin. Thanks so much for having me.
Sophia, first of all, do you believe it? Do you believe that this happened?
I believe it because I believe that we did it. I think we as a community, not only was it inevitable, but it was because we pushed so hard. We refuse to be denied.
I mean, unanimously, did you expect that?
Well, what I want to say for those who are listening, the reason why it was unanimous consent, and this is important. So it's important we are so overjoyed, but understand it's because of our advocacy. So it was passed in the House because the Democrats took control of the House and the House finally had the votes to be able to put it up. So they did. Now in the Senate, Senator Menendez, who's actually from California, Senator Menendez put it up for what's called unanimous consent. And what that means is that it would pass with flying colors unless one senator spoke up. And what's important is that actually Trump sent three different senators on behalf of the White House three times to kill it. And it did. It was killed three times. But Senator Menendez, and it was co-sponsored by Republican Ted Cruz, got up there and said, we are going to bring this up every week until you do it. And that's the kind of fight. That's the tenacity we need, right? Wow. That's the Armenian spirit. And he actually said that in his last and final push when it did go through, and he broke down crying. And I encourage everybody to actually look at the footage of it because it's very moving.
I'll make sure that there's a link on our show notes today to that. Yeah, I saw that. It is very moving. Can you back up a little bit? Because a lot of our listeners maybe don't know what's involved. We got people listening from throughout the world. Yeah. This is a United States issue that is also echoing throughout the world.
Right.
But I know in some places, this is kind of like a foreign idea. Like, for instance, in France, you can't deny the genocide.
Right.
And they're saying, what? You mean you guys in America haven't recognized?
Right.
So can you back up? What is this about? To our listeners who might not know what the resolution is about. What is?
Yeah, so this has been a struggle that Armenian Americans have been pushing for actually now for decades. And has been a part, of course, of our Armenian identity since we arrived in the U.S. from the very earliest Armenians. But this Senate resolution and this House resolution are really part of a multi-step process, which is about securing official recognition by the United States government of the Armenian Genocide as a genocide that occurred. And this is important because we live in a world, in a global geopolitics, which actually has a status quo as denialism. And that is because of the alliances of the government of Turkey and the government of the United States. And it should be noted, you know, now that I really am in the world of academia and in scholarship, that while there is academic consensus and while there is, of course, the truth that happened, we know that it is because of politics and because of power that we are not able to achieve justice and reparation, right, and healing from this moment. And up until this point, the United States has been co-signing that official denialist policy, actually as a matter of foreign policy and domestic policy. It's actually made it its law is to sign on to this denialism by the government of Turkey. And so it's important to note that Armenian Americans are not just fighting for, you know, validation or that we need the United States to tell us our own history or that we think the U.S. has a moral authority over our own history. Really, this is about the steps of community organizing, the steps of activism that require us to go to the people that are blocking our justice and preventing this history from actually having a healing resolution that it needs from all parties. And what you have is you have governments really preventing the will of us as a community, as a global community, right, to be able to put forward our next chapter on what it means to be Armenian Americans because of this continued co-signing by the powers that be that this history is what they call fake.
It's interesting you bring up the scholarly, and actually you talked a little bit about validation, which I'd like to get back to later on. Scholarly background. I mean, it's amazing. Here's some of the big problems. You've got the United States ambassador in Turkey sitting there documenting all of this and sending it out. This is an official of the United States. You've got throughout history, you've got people talking. Why do we keep coming back to this? Like, is it possible now that we've passed this resolution, is it possible that in 2 years they'll say, well, wait a minute, we didn't mean this? I mean, you've got even President Reagan referred to it as genocide. So why do we keep coming back if it's already documented in history? And what does that history tell us?
What we know in history is that perpetrators of violence always not only do the violence, but then they say that when you speak of it, that you're lying or that you're crazy. And this is important. This is actually a concept that people who do trauma work focus on. It's the idea of gaslighting your victims. And that's what it means. It means that the way to delegitimize a victimized group or an oppressed group, right, is by trying to undermine either who they are or, most importantly, say that what they're speaking on is crazy or it's fake. Mm-hmm. And what we know about the scholarly and the political is that there are millions of pieces of evidence of the Armenian Genocide. There are 15 million of us in the global diaspora who each have a story. The issue is not a lack of evidence. The issue is not that there are not historians. The issue is not that we don't even have U.S. government officials who were personally eyewitness for these events. The issue is that no matter how much evidence we keep bringing up, power, those in power, deny us. Because it would mean, first of all, a reflection in the mirror for the Turkish public, right? An existential reckoning, right, that they would have to come to terms with their own history, because it's not just about us. It's about what does Turkish identity mean? What has it meant? Mm-hmm. How have people consumed their own identity, right? And consumed, government ideas of what it means to be a citizen, what it means to be a person, who we exclude and who we include. And most importantly, for U.S., recognition, what we can never do is fall into the trap of, well, where are the historians? Because that is a tactic, plain and simple, of the government of Turkey that is used every single time any Armenian says, here we are.
Well, actually, you bring up some, I mean, things that I wanted to ask you, and you've kind of like answered those, that it is because of the political climate right now, and right, it is politics. It's not really a matter of history. It's not a matter of
the documentation. I have to say this to everyone, because there are people in various Middle Eastern presses, and now that I'm in Middle Eastern study, I think it's important for people to really realize that, you know, this notion that, oh, this was just a political move, for example, because Turkey was finally not looking great in, you know, American political life, which there's always been a very large alliance between American politicians and Turkish politicians, mm-hmm, right, that have never focused on the priorities of the people. But the truth is that genocide is always political, mm-hmm, no matter what. You can't depoliticize it, yeah. You know. Even the killings themselves, right, were about creating a racialized other. And so this notion that all of a sudden Armenian Americans who have been advocating for this recognition, right, that it only happened because Turkey invaded Syria, not only is that not accurate, it also marginalizes and erases how we've been fighting for this for decades. And it was only because we had every single step in line, mm-hmm, to make it happen. And finally, the blocks to it started to fall. And that's what's happening. Denialism, the blocks are falling, including in the hearts and minds of the Turkish public. And that's what the government is so afraid of.
Okay, we talk about it. You talk about it from your background as a scholar, as an activist. Can I get a little personal? You have a personal story.
Yeah.
You have parents, you have grandparents. How does that play in? Does that, you know, you're removed from it 100 years. Mm-hmm. And anybody else looking at it might say, wow, 100 years, that's a lot of time. You know, what are you talking about? What's triggering you to get so involved? What is that personal story?
Yeah. So first, what I have to say is that I'm the descendant of 8 genocide survivors. So there's no part of my Armenian identity that was not someone who either escaped or was massacred. And this is different. You know, Armenians don't all have that same story. And that diversity in our community is very important. But I also think it's important for people who are direct descendants to speak up and say our histories, because our histories cut through the denialism. Our very existence cuts through the denialism. So on my dad's side, my family is from Hadjin and Istanbul, and they were really deeply affected to the point where my great-grandfather, and this is my grandpa's father, he grew up talking to me about him since I came out of the womb. And he was an orphan. I mean, he lost everyone. And most importantly, what I talk about a lot in my work is this is not something of the past. This is the name I carry. Every time that I write Sophia Armen, Armen, he lost his last name because he was actually separated from his family. He watched them massacred in front of him. And he was so young, and his first name was Armen, that when American missionaries found him, and these American missionaries at the time were actually trying to convert the Eastern Christians into American Protestantism, which no one talks about, but that's true. When they found him, they ended up anglicizing his name. And so he couldn't actually find any more of his family because he had changed his name forever. And it wasn't until he got to the U.S. that he ends up changing his first name, Albert, that they gave him, into an Armenian name, Avadis, in an act of resistance to reclaim his Armenian identity. And so these are things that are common throughout Armenian genocide stories, is that this is not something of the past, just in the same way that when we're here in the United States, we know that the original sins, right, of indigenous genocide here and chattel slavery, right, they affect the American politics today. The idea, and none of us would ever say that that's not true. That's completely true. It shapes the way that power and race happens today. Mm-hmm. And so we know that, that that's what's happening in Turkey today. And because Turkey and the U.S. exist, right, in a global politics, this is something that no matter who recognizes or not, this is part of our identity. And my family on both sides, on my other side, who are from Van, right, and from Kharpert, were also part of the largest Armenian centers of these massacres by the Turkish government. And to this day, Turkey uses Van as an excuse for why the Armenians deserve to die. Mm-hmm. And to this day, in Van, Turkey is currently targeting Van as a center of the Kurdish struggle, to the point where they have curfews and military checkpoints, and the same racialized tropes that were used against us during the genocide and are used today by saying that Armenians are the boogeyman in Turkey, right? They use this as a trope and other. Mm-hmm. Now they're doing that in Van to Kurds. And so what it shows you is, and this is what I would say for the rest of my life, mm-hmm. once you put violence in this world, it never disappears. It only transfers.
Yeah, you're bringing up so many issues that I think...
I know, Dervaz, what you're telling me, I'm too much. I'm an Armenian. And another problem is I talk too much. But you taught me, you know, that's the thing.
No, you're not talking too much. It's just there's so many ideas that are coming up in this conversation that I'd love to explore. One of which is you talked about Turkey and U.S. Existing in this global world. Well, we're no longer a globalized... I mean, yeah, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and that we're not talking about lifetimes ago. We're talking about 10 years ago. We were talking about a global society, and now we've got the walls up, and Brexit's happening.
Yeah, there's definitely a global rise right now. You see it in all of the elections across all of the governments, especially in the U.S. and in Europe, mm-hmm. where you see a backlash towards these ideas of. Mm-hmm. really a kind of coexistence amongst all people of the world. And you see that in a kind of hardening, a hardened line against immigrants, against refugees. And I think as Armenians, this is really important that we stand up against, because throughout every single generation, of our experience, and especially as Armenian Americans, you know, whether you came here directly from the genocide, or you came here from Lebanon, or you came here from Syria, or you most recently came here from Iraq during the Iraq War, or if you came here from Armenia after the fall of the Soviet Union, that refugee story has been part of our history. And in some Armenian families, it's compounded. It's multiple generations of displacement. And so what we know is that this hatred of an other, right, of a, quote, foreigner, or a construction of someone as not belonging, right, is what leads to things like mass violence, genocide. And so we have to be very careful and make sure that we stand up with the people who are being villainized and ask why. Mm-hmm. What is the purpose? What are the political aims? And most importantly, like you're asking, in a globalized world, which means we're all connected, we have to reconfigure what it means to have a human identity, because it does mean that we will be with people and we will see people online and we will interact with people who are different than us.
Right. So true. We're interacting with different people. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the mechanism of protest. It changes a lot from day to day because of technology that we have, quite different from, say, protest 50 years ago, where you would organize a march and getting out there. Today in this globalized world, you have a new system, a new means of getting things done, as was obvious with this resolution. So I would like to talk a little bit about that, especially you as a in your capacity as a community organizer. How do you see protest? And maybe we can leave this for the second portion of today's interview. So let's take a break right now, and we'll come back to that. And Sophia Armen. What did I tell you? Pretty incredible, right? Well, there is more to come. We take a break every week, and we play a song of the day, something unusual, something fitting the moment, something to give us a chance to digest what we've just heard, and also take us away. Give us a chance to relax amongst everything else. This is off of John Bilezikchian, one of my favorites, his Merry Christmas album, very appropriate for the season. Enjoy. The unmistakable oud artistry of John Bilezikchian. That is off of his Merry Christmas album, Yesu, Joy of Man's Desire, Bach, Johann Sebastian Bach. On the oud, well, of course on the oud. The oud is the great granddaddy of the guitar. And yeah, if Bach had one, you'd bet he'd be playing one. I will have a link on today's show notes. Do check out these links that I put there. Most importantly, check out these artists. It's a link to not only the song, but to his music, to the album, and get to know some of this music. Because, you know, it all points to the God-given ability to create from nothing. I mean, isn't that what God is? He takes nothing and he makes something. Just imagine, you've got nothing and you put together an instrument. You tighten strings and you play these strings to create music that allows people to live and communicate. Here is an artist, John Bilezikchian, who passed away a few years ago. God rest his soul. But he lives on. He can't die. He lives on through this legacy, through this music that he has left us. And this music talks to us today. It lives. It keeps us living. So get to know it. Get to know these artists, especially John Bilezikchian. Hope you enjoyed it. Let's get back to our interview with Sophia Arman. We are back, and our guest today, Sophia Arman. So happy to have her with us. We were talking about the Armenian Genocide Resolution and its passage here in the United States. I want to get a little bit more personal. She started to tell us a little bit about her own background. Sophia, tell me about protest in general right now. There's a few things that have bothered me about the Armenian Genocide Resolution, one of which is we've taken it as a point of protest. We have protested that Turkey is denying it. And we've allowed others to be the judge and jury on that. It has bothered me, and I've been very vocal about this, that I can't see any other community that would have allowed this discussion to go on. I wouldn't imagine that the African American community would say, you know, let the Congress discuss whether slavery happened. I can't imagine that the Jews would be sitting around and saying, let Congress decide whether there was a Holocaust or not. But for some reason, we felt very comfortable about letting them. And how does this, where's our protest? I know you talked a little bit about that earlier, but how about directly that question?
I think the politics of recognition is a politics that's deeply dehumanizing. And I think Armenians, we know that deeply. The idea of having to prove something to your oppressor or to have your oppressor validate your own existence and your own trauma and your own stories mm-hmm. is inherently flawed.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us know that. I even think most of our fierce, amazing advocates in ANCA and Armenian Assembly and people who have been fighting and writing on this for years and decades and generations know this. We know this more than anyone, which is that governments can never tell us our truth. We know our truth and we don't need anyone to say it or not in a psychological way, in a community way, 100%. Mm-hmm. The truth of these, you know, historical events and kind of ongoing struggles you mentioned of, for example, of Black communities or even Native folks on this land, right, mm-hmm. is about the material reality of our people. And that's the truth of our various people. Even for Jewish folks today, there are people who deny the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. And that denial is not awful and devastating and horrific and, you know, anti-Semitic just because someone says, oh, no, I don't believe it. It's because it's tied to these systems of racism that live today. And so the truth of the recognition, I think, you know, is a complicated one. I have always felt deeply uncomfortable with putting any moral authority, right, in governments that commit their own mass atrocities all the time. However, I also am not just an ideologue. I'm not one of those people who believes that it's, you know, a back or forth, whatever. I believe in community organizing strategies, and that's what I believe this is. I think recognition is powerful, and this Senate and House resolution, most importantly, are so powerful, not because it proclaims a new truth, but because it is our activism that came to fruition. And it is a joyous celebration of all of those legacies of people who dared say it, even in the most, you know, egregious circumstances, when they were being hated on by people all around the world, right? I mean, when you speak on Armenian genocide to this day, my inbox, your inbox, people come after you. Yeah. There are Turkish nationalists whose entire identities are based around the denial of Armenian identity in this history. And so this has never been a easy fight. And there are so many people who have refused to back down in the face of powers actually systematically working against them. And so I think, you know, there's an important, definitely, I think the concept is one we need to debate, right? Okay. And that's most important because you see it now. What's next, right? If we were to base our entire identities on recognition from our oppressors, then we always will be left with, now what do we do, right? The U.S. did it. So we can't at all ever think that that's the center of everything, right? And that's an important question we're left with now, which I actually think the new generation, when you're talking about protest, is actually doing quite well. And it's time, I think, for us to have an intergenerational conversation that helps to unite the past efforts with today. Because what we are in is a global conversation. And like you were saying, it might have been that you used to organize a bunch of people, right, outside the consulate. And I still think actually that's deeply necessary. It's even more necessary for my generation who's sitting at computer screens. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we are having the political debates about what these issues mean to us. And that's something that I think we get to have in a more democratized way than we ever have. You don't need to be an Armenian studies genocide scholar, right, to discuss what is the case for reparations. We all have an opinion on that, and now we get to have them in more collective ways. And so I actually think in this moment, we need to be asking those tough questions.
Is that a judgmental statement if I were to say that, yeah, but you don't want everybody's? There are certain people who shouldn't be in the discussion, you know, denialists, for instance, right? See, to me, it's not up for debate. The genocide is not up for debate. 100%. And I know you agree and everything, but when you have this open environment, everybody's involved, everybody's welcome to share their ideas, you're going to run the risk of have, and not only run the risk, you have people that are going to come in and give their denialist versions, right?
For sure. And the internet is a great place for you to become, you know, deeply depressed and see all sides of how people, no matter what, will deny truth. No matter what. Even if it's right in front of them, even if it's well-sourced, even if it has every backing. And that is the Armenian genocide denialism line. That's what it is. It doesn't matter. The whole point is every time you say, oh, here are 100 historians who have said this, they say, oh no, we don't believe them. Or, oh no, give us another 100 more, right? But this democratizing is important because it does give the people who are directly affected the ability to have conversations with each other that they never could have had. I'll give you an example. Right now, I'm basically a pen pal with an incredible organizer in Turkey, who's an Armenian youth like me, like basically my age. And he's fighting against the Turkish government, right? And it's anti-Armenian racism. And I'm here in the US fighting against anti-Armenian racism here today. And also racism that targets many communities here today. And we get to talk and we discuss, what does this mean? I asked him this week, so how does this affect you guys? Now that this was put up, are you going to have repercussions in Turkey around this? And he got to tell me firsthand, this is what the newspapers are saying. This is how it's happening. We need to come up with a better globalized fight of Armenians, right? Where we're actually in connection and we're helping each other. And we see each other as each parts of pieces or roles for this struggle. So I say this because truth resonates. It might be now that, you know, the internet is a all open place where you can have lots of disinformation, where you can have awful racist targeting. And trust me, my communication platforms, I get targeted pretty severely. But What's important about it is we get to connect with people who, no matter what the people in power say, there are always people silently watching, and they hear and they know. Mm-hmm. And so you, I think, and me represent a really great part of what needs to come together, which is different generations of Armenians who have been fighting the same fight, right? And we need to come up with not more tactics, but actually what are our goals, right? What would justice for the Armenian genocide actually look like? And that's finally the place we get to have. Armenian Americans, we've been so focused, right, on the U.S. recognition, we didn't allow ourselves the space to always have those discussions. But that's what we've always been kind of talking about, but we really can talk about now. What would it look like? This is your grandparents, right? Am I right?
Yeah.
What do you think that honoring their memory looks like for you? And I don't think there's a wrong answer, but I also think there could be a collective answer we come up with that moves us as individuals who are people that were affected into what would it look like to actually have justice around this? What would it mean for Turkey to come to terms with this? How could we get there?
Well, you know, I mean, the question we came at, and you were involved with this, is the entire idea of In His Shoes, that the whole idea is that, well, we answer violence in the past by addressing issues that are happening in the world today. But how do we go from what has been given to us? And specifically, you know it, I know it, that on April 24th,
right,
everyone will wake up that they're Armenian. Yet April 25th, they're back asleep. I mean, let's be honest with it, okay? Mm-hmm. That there are many people like yourself and like our organization, such as the ANC and the activists that are out there, and they'll do it. But for the even greater number, they're content with getting up on April 24th and marching to the local embassy, making some noise, and then coming home. How do you instill that that desire to continue throughout the year? Maybe it's personal. What incites you?
Yeah, I mean, so in every way, I should not be Armenian anymore, right? I am a third generation Armenian American. The forces of assimilation in the U.S. are so deeply strong, and I need to say this because I need us to grapple with it as a community. There's a lot of divisions within communities saying, you know, this is the right way to be Armenian, this is not, this is, et cetera, right? But I think what's most important is to usually identify the forces of power that are helping to shape those realities, right? So for one of them, that some of the earliest Armenian American communities, when they were formed in the U.S., and a lot of Armenians don't actually know this, you know, they were faced with systematic discrimination. And so in many ways, survival looked different. And it's going to look different in every generation, right? It meant chopping off their names, and it meant creating their own organizations because they weren't allowed into certain organizations. It meant, you know, having to form coalitions with other communities that were discriminated against, right? Mm-hmm. That's right. Always been part of our history. And so we need to do that today. Right. And I found most powerful, the best way to honor Armenian identity is, number one, I think preservation efforts are really important, and I think they're political. I don't think it's just in a vacuum of me trying to learn Armenian, keep it alive, go, you know, to church, go to our organizations, go help our community, right? Help feed people who are less fortunate, help. That actually is the way I honor my ancestors.
Right.
Beyond that, though, preservation of what's been lost, sure, but erasure is the basis of genocide. It's the basis on this land in the United States, right? It is what the U.S. government has had as its policy since its founding, is the notion of erasing its indigenous population. And we know that to be our greatest struggle in the genocide, that it was all about trying to wipe us out, right? And so the best thing we can do is, as William Saroyan has said, right, is to shout Armenian wherever we are. Shout Armenia. Be an Armenian. Feel it. Like, really embrace it. Mm-hmm. That not only your actions reflect on you as an individual, but that you are uplifting an Armenian global community with everything you do. Mm-hmm. And so, directly, that means not just coming out on April 24th, but really seeing this gift of life as an opportunity to enhance and thrive. It's actually more about, can we dismantle those barriers that are preventing us, right? Some of those barriers that I see today is this idea of just individualism, right? We all should just stay in our own corner. And, you know, maybe I think about Armenian identity all day, right? Maybe I think about, wow, I personally have a skill that, for example, I'm really good at, you know, helping people connect with Armenian American activist history or something like that. Whatever everyone's skills are, we need them as an Armenian community. So feel like it is your place. I think some people say, oh, no, no, this has to be the advocates. Everyone is an advocate in our community. Mm-hmm. We should create spaces where people feel welcome. And most importantly, the best thing you can do to be Armenian is not just to survive in an isolated corner, but to come out and be with your fellow Armenians and to help create institutions, to help create organizations, to help existing ones, right? And participate collectively. This is important. Mm-hmm. We can't just thrive on our own. That's never how our Armenian identity has been. Even during the genocide, people had to help each other. And so we have to do that. And most importantly, we have to make connections to other communities and the issues that they are facing.
You articulate that so well. And there's something about the way you present things. I want to share with our listeners something that you said last week in your interview in the LA Times. It says, this might seem overblown to Western audiences. And I bring this up because I think a lot of times you have Western audiences looking at it. Hey, you guys are talking about something that happened 100 years ago, something that happened on the other side of the world, and we've got our own issues. I mean, we're impeaching a president right now. What are you guys talking about, okay? So I love this statement that you make here. It says, this might seem overblown to Western audiences, but for a community that has faced ongoing issues of erasure, things like our family name, our connection to land, our connection to culture, it is the everyday existential crisis. And that existential crisis is what I want to address. There is a crisis, right? There is, we all feel that. There's something weird that we're here, right? I mean, ideally, we shouldn't be.
We shouldn't be here.
Right?
No, and that's the truth.
Not ideally, but
no,
in reality, we're not. We shouldn't. Yeah, but we're here, okay?
I
remember an uncle was visiting me from Armenia, and we're going on that tour of San Francisco Bay, and we're sitting in a boat, and he looks up at this beautiful Golden Gate Bridge. He says, this is an incredible structure. He says, you're born in America. He says, do you feel like this belongs to you? And I go, no, you know, and he says, that's the point. He says, my Mount Ararat belongs to me, and that's why I would never work in our be alive here in America. And it just, that's that existential crisis. What am I sitting here doing? Tell me a little bit about that crisis. What does it mean to be Armenian, to have an Armenia?
This is the question.
Yeah.
This is what I want all of us. I want us youth to fully embrace that we get to have an opinion on this. I want us to sit in it. I want us to disagree. I want us to come up with, I believe Armenian identity is deeply diverse. And I say this not just because that we are different. I say it to mean that we actually have had different histories, and that's the truth. But what I know is that our struggle is one. And I really believe in that. And so we actually need to listen to each other. The idea of an existential crisis comes from the root of how genocide happens. Genocide is formed by the creation of an other, a racialized other. And that other has to be wiped out. People need to understand that the genocide didn't just happen in a vacuum. It happened because of an ideology. And that ideology is called Turanism, for people who are not familiar across the world. Turanism, or Pan-Turkism, is deeply alive today. It has writings, it has people, it has figureheads, it has scholars, just like every type of, you know, the white supremacy that lives in the United States, or anti-Semitism as it existed in Germany. All of these ideologies, they aren't just what people think. They're not just what your uncle says. They are actually legislated. There are people and histories that created these things. And so when I think of the existential crisis, I don't think of it as our fault. I've said this before, but I believe that the Armenian diaspora is like shattered glass. It means someone struck it, right? And so we're shattered all across the world, in corners of the world we don't even know. I mean, there's so many of us and so many ways that we are Armenian. And that's just the truth, you know? I believe, you know, the estimates are around 15 million. I bet there's more than that. There are people who have ancestry from this time, right? That might be slivers upon slivers upon slivers. But they're part of our conversation on the genocide. And so the existential crisis has to be rectified, because genocide and other forms of racism, like settler colonialism, right, or colonialism, the reason why they are so awful is that it's a psychic violence. Racism gets at the heart of identity. That's the truth. It robs you of who you are, because it constructs it for you. And most importantly, in genocide, in our genocide history, it's about a connection to land. And it's one that has been robbed from us. And that's a very real thing. And I think people think that, you know, in the community that everyone has this experience, but that's not true. We're actually one of the only global communities that exists in greater numbers outside of our historic homeland than in it. And no one else has that except for the Palestinians in the world, just so we're clear. Yeah. And so when we understand that fact, we have to understand with that for so long, our political center, right, has jumped, because it's had to. It's not our fault. Everyone out here is always trying to find blame, I think, amongst each other, right? Why isn't justice happening? Why doesn't it look like this? You're not really Armenian. You're Armenian. You're not Armenian enough. This is what Armenian identity looks like. But instead of us just asking those questions, we should ask, why do we have to ask those questions? It's because it's an existential crisis, because the genocide forced us to. Mm-hmm. We aren't just all living out here, right? I think of it like a nebulous out here, just hanging out, right? Because we wanted to. No, it's because my grandparents' family was forced to flee. That's why we're here. Yeah. The idea in some way that we can assign, right, a kind of blame on that, either, you know, we're not enough, I think is not asking the right questions. And so for me, the existential crisis gets to the heart of the mechanism of genocide, the way it works. And so the best thing that we can do is identify the way power works and then fight against it. Mm-hmm. And today, what that means is we can look to and be in community with other communities that have gone through these wrongs, that are going through wrongs today, injustices today. And we should not only be in solidarity with them, we should be in joint struggle with them. Mm-hmm. Because our freedom and ultimately our justice for the genocide is connected to all other people who are struggling for justice in the world.
You are bringing up so many things. I could sit here and talk to you all day. I wish we could run it. I mean, for instance, we're coming up against a big one in our in the church life. If you look at the whole December 25th, January 6th, for most Armenians, the whole idea of having a January 6th is it's a unique little space that we could all exist in, and without necessarily having to appeal to the history of why that's there. The same thing when you talk about Armenian identity, that existential question taken out. Like, how would you answer this? An Armenian is somebody who says he's Armenian. Is that enough? Do you have to bring in blood? Do you have to bring in history? Because we're running this was brought up a few years ago when they found these Armenians in Turkey that had 100 years ago. Yeah, Hemshin, okay? And they came to Armenia, and our Catholicos said, an Armenian is somebody who says he is Armenian. That's it.
I think I could understand actually that sentiment, in the sense that if it could be one that is more inclusive than a lot of our exclusionary identities or exclusionary discussions around Armenian identity today, which I actually find to just be preventing people from embracing what they're already doing or amplifying what they're already doing. But I would say Armenian is one who declares themselves and then also one with what they do. So it's not just who you say you are, it's also what you do. But I would say this, you know, Armenian identity, actually all identity, you know, now that I'm an ethnic studies person and I'm an educator, right? And I've been so wonderfully, and I'm so honored to have been kind of welcomed into this ethnic studies family, which really, ethnic studies, for those who aren't familiar, is really the study of how race and power interact. And ethnic studies was birthed in the United States as a student movement, actually, of communities of color who were talking about the way race was constructed, and they were talking about racism because they were disincluded from the history books. They were not included in politics, in the discussions. And so the notion of justice is one that I work in all the time. And it's not just in my professional life. I think all of us who do Armenian work are really doing a politics of justice. You know, our existence itself is political, but when you do your existence, something changes. You have an impact. You have a true impact. And I know for myself that the strongest way that we can be Armenian is to be generous with those around us and to work against injustice with those who need it. Because we know this. We should know this more than anyone. And it's not just because of what happened during the genocide. It's not just because this legacy is so present today, right? It's because it's right. It's what we should always do. And that might make us deeply unpopular. And I need to say that to all the people out there, that a lot of times you will stand alone. You will feel lonely and isolated. I mean, completely. Even when you are surrounded in the community. Because, you know, especially us Armenians, we got an opinion on everything. We are not a quiet people. And that goes for every Armenian I've met across the world. You know, we are not people who hold our tongue. And I think that's a beautiful part about us. But that's what we have to do. We have to say who is being targeted, who is being victimized, who are the marginalized, who is being vilified by society. We should question who that is and question why. And we should stand with the people who are being oppressed, not the oppressor. So that is what it means to be Armenian to me. It's to be free. And what being free means is you have to eradicate the systems that are trying to make people unfree.
Can't agree more. In fact, we walk in other people's shoes exactly for that reason. Thank you so much. This is, you know what? I'm looking at all my questions that I had pre-interview. You've answered every one of them because I wanted to get into a whole bunch of stuff about like why this. But no, will you promise to come back? Because I've got like other stuff too. Like, aren't we the original Caucasians? Don't answer that, okay? We'll get into
that. Just Oh God, let's talk. I'm doing a whole thesis on it.
Let's put a bookmark right there because I would love to have you back on and talk about some of the other things. But I want to thank you very much and wish you all the best. You're doing some incredible work, and I know you beyond, of course, this issue and the article. I admire the work that you're doing, and it's all I could wish you is the best.
Thank you.
God's blessings and strength, patience too. I can get you a bunch of virtues, but a lot of strength because you really need it in everything that you're doing.
Yeah, and I just want to say a huge thank you and shout out to In His Shoes. I think In His Shoes embodies all of the best ways to be Armenian, and I've seen it. I'm not just saying this, you know, to gas you all up. I say this very sincerely, that you see the people who day in, day out are working around issues of justice, who are working around issues of, you know, our collective humanity and eradicating systems of oppression. And you guys have been on the front lines forever since your founding and before that. And I want to say that a lot of people come out on those moments of successes, right? When things are great, when we feel good. But it's the day in, day out work that makes those successes possible. And so I really believe In His Shoes has been a huge force for making, you know, this day of Armenian genocide recognition happen. I truly believe that it's every Armenian that has ever, you know, spoke our history or organized events or talked about it really in a way that's beyond just your individual, right? But instead helped the American public to understand these issues. We should all be celebrating. We all should be. Because, again, this is the fruition. These are instances that show we are our ancestors' wildest dreams. They never believed that we would even exist. And yet here we are. And we're thriving. And not only are we living, we're honoring their memory by fighting injustice today.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much. Merry Christmas and Happy
New Year.
Merry
Christmas. Thank you. Happy New Year.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you to our listeners. Well, first of all, for listening, but for your prayers, your comments, your support. Yeah, can you believe we are over 600 every week coming out for the last 12 years? We've been putting out this podcast, and you know, you can support all you want. It's those prayers that's that extra push. So thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. We did an interview with just a truly articulate young lady who is able to share ideas, and you know, keep an eye on this one. This is up and coming. I mean, she's already there, but there's a lot to go. So hope you enjoyed today's podcast, and I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear your comments, and hopefully we can have her back on the show soon. Listen, I know we are at a great time in the life cycle. I know our listeners down under in Australia and Argentina. I just got a wonderful, wonderful card from a listener in Argentina with pictures of graduation. And I'm going, oh yeah, that's right. It's summer over there. Well, here in the Northern Hemisphere, we are up against our winter solstice, the shortest day of the year. I guess that's going to be the longest day of the year for you guys down there, right? I imagine it has to work that way, right? There's a rhyme and reason why nature works the way. Of course there is, of course. Anyway, this Saturday happens to be the winter solstice for us, and that means the day after. It's the shortest day of the year, and the day after, well, the sun makes the days longer and longer, and the celebration in ancient times of the birth of the sun, S-U-N, and we will overshadow it with, and no pun intended, with the birth of the sun, S-O-N, with Christmas coming and New Year and Theophany. So much to share with you in the coming weeks. I hope you'll join us next Thursday. We're going to have a special Christmas Next Step. It'll be a special one that I think you're going to really enjoy. Anyway, we just celebrated with the people at FLY, Freedom Loving Youth, and we were at their gala. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to use that as the basis for our Christmas celebration next week. Okay, so bear with me a little bit, but I do have to tell you, it was overwhelming. It was so moving. And I'm truly happy that, you know, every year In His Shoes picks out a place. And as Sophia just mentioned in her comments, you know, it is an answer to all the evil that we saw as a people who suffered genocide. We have an opportunity to do something in this world today for others. It's not so much paying it forward as much as it is to realize who we are, what we have, the uniqueness that we share in life with people who do suffer, and there's quite a bit, and an opportunity for us to help out. Pure and simple. We won't complicate it any further. Hey, listen, I want to thank you for joining us today and want to wish you all a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year if we don't talk before the New Year. But you're promising me you're going to join me next week. We have a special edition on the other side of Christmas. But here's a tip for the front end of Christmas, Christmas Eve. Couple things, okay? If you happen to be in the Los Angeles area, do join us. We're going to be at the St. Leon Armenian Cathedral. I've been asked to give a message, and I've got a very special manger scene. It starts at 6 in the evening, giving you plenty of time, and this is going to be filled with Christmas carols. It's December 24th. It's a one-hour, very special, meaningful celebration of Christmas. 1 hour, 6 to 7, December 24th. If you're not with us, if you're not in the area, let me take this opportunity to just give you a small little tip. It is Christmas Eve. Make it easy for Santa to come into your house, okay? If you're going to light a fire that night and you're using your chimney, make sure the fire is out before you go to bed so that Santa has a chance to come down. Put out a little treat, not only for the reindeers, not only the cookies for Santa, but a little cognac. Cognac goes a long way for Santa. Make it a happy occasion for him, because he's got a big trek that night. And then have a great Christmas, and I'll see you on the other side. On the 26th, our next podcast, the day after, I promise it's going to be a very special one, meaningful one, one that's filled with holiday Christmas cheer. Listen, I'd love to hear from you. Drop us a line at feedback@epostle.net or join us on all the socials. On behalf of the wonderful crew that put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Voskin saying Merry Christmas and looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
The reason of the season.